Move to the second case this morning. Legato Vapors LLC versus David Cook. Tanford.
May it please the court. Indiana's e-liquid act is unconstitutionally extraterritorial for three reasons. First, it directly regulates how manufacturing facilities located in other states must be built, equipped, and operated. Secondly, it regulates transactions between producers and their customers that take place entirely outside of Indiana. And third, by imposing Indiana's regulatory regime on producers located outside of the state, it subjects them to potentially inconsistent regulations by their home states, and it supplants the regulatory policies of the states in which they are located. Under the precedents from this circuit and the Supreme Court, legislation which is extraterritorial is per se invalid, regardless of the state's interest, because a state's interest in regulation stops at its own borders. When it crosses those borders, it intrudes upon the constitutional authority of a sister state to impose different or its own regulations. First issue, the Indiana Act requires every producer of an e-liquid whose products might end up being possessed or used in the state to obtain an Indiana permit.
Now, would that include a purchaser that purchases from another state and bringing, I'm not talking about a seller, I'm talking about a purchaser, then carries them into the regulated state, Indiana. Would that be a violation?
Yes, Your Honor.
Who's the violator, the producer or the person that bought it and brought it into the state?
They would both be in violation. The act applies to manufacturers in state and out of state if any of their products are possessed in the state, however they got there. There is also a provision that makes it unlawful for anyone from Indiana to purchase an e-liquid if the producer of it did not have an Indiana permit.
So an out-of-state manufacturer, I gather, would have some considerable difficulty in contracting with its wholesalers or distributors to say, you've got a guarantee that none of this is going to wind up in Indiana because we don't want to comply with Indiana's law.
That is correct.
Sort of like a covenant that runs with the tank, right?
That
as opposed to the land.
That is exactly the situation here. One of the plaintiffs, Legato Vapors, is a distributor located in Kentucky. Its suppliers, producers located in Nevada and Connecticut, have stopped sending it products because Legato Vapors distributes them all over the place, including Indiana. So the contract between the producer and the wholesaler or the distributor, that contract is formed and executed and from the producer's view finished completely out of state. And then the producer, who is the one that must build its facilities by Indiana's rules, install, comply with Indiana's commercial kitchen code, even though these producers don't have kitchens, and must find a security firm where that complies with Indiana's rules that are so specific, detailed, and unusual that no such security firm exists outside the one in Indiana. That producer must comply with regulations that are virtually impossible to comply with in order to contract not with somebody in Indiana, but to contract with someone outside the state of Indiana.
How many producers are qualified in Indiana, or do you know?
Under the new act?
Mm-hmm.
Under the new act, I do not know. I believe that six producers, at least four of which are located inside Indiana, have qualified under this law to get a permit. I believe that the total number of producers before the law who were supplying liquid to Indiana was something like 180.
Yeah, well, so it eliminates any competition for the in-state people, so I assume they can charge a lot more.
It does, and they can, and they become the gatekeeper. They become the one who gets to pick and choose which producers get a license. And even then, it is impossible for some to get it because the record evidence below from the expert were that to provide security under Indiana's rules, the security firm must be located close enough to the production facility that if an alarm goes off, they can send somebody there to find out what's going on, because it requires the security firm to be the one who monitors the security.
It's not enough to just have internal security arrangements.
No, the statute specifically requires that the producer have its security monitored off-site by the company. And in this case, we've got producers in Florida, we've got producers in Nevada, we've got producers in Connecticut who are among the plaintiffs in this case, and it simply is not possible for them to comply mm-hmm. with Indiana's regulations.
Mr. Tanford, could I ask you about, in essence, the line you want us to draw here? Because the original complaint in this case sought considerably broader relief than you seem to be arguing for right now, in that it was challenging, for example, the packaging and labeling requirements of the Indiana statute. I understand your brief to drop that challenge and to be focusing, in essence, on the manufacturing the processes and I'm not sure exactly how far that goes, but manufacturing processes out of state and transactions that are totally out of state, right?
Correct.
So packaging and labeling requirements are at least can be reasonable and can be okay.
Certainly, right? Particularly when they are addressed to when the laws governing them, and there are some in this, they are confined to the state's borders.
Right.
They don't say Vermont, they must be packaged in other states.
The Vermont lamps.
The Vermont case, yes.
Right. Okay. How about testing of products that are shipped into Indiana?
That is, again, it depends on who must do the testing to some extent.
Well, if the state can test.
Right, the state can test, but if the regulation is that that to have them on a retail shelf in Indiana, mm-hmm. they must be tested. Mm-hmm. But not if everything from the producer must be tested, including those going to other states.
Right. Okay. What about you? If I understood you correctly, you also were challenging the Indiana law requiring on-site inspections, or at least requiring an out-of-state manufacturer or in-state manufacturer to submit to on-site inspections. Does that pose the extraterritorial problem, in your view?
It would depend. In the modern era, there are other situations of out-of-state corporations qualifying to do business in Indiana mm-hmm. where they do a form of electronic record keeping and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There is not a general requirement. If the requirement is reporting, mm-hmm. make sure taxes are paid, quantities, sending in results of testing that you have, that your nicotine levels are correct and your ingredient labeling is correct, things like that. That's fine because it's asking to audit only those products coming into Indiana. Mm-hmm. The problem with the way that this law is written, and it's a bit ambiguous as to how the ATC would actually apply it, is that it appears to give the Indiana regulators to require that the producer consent to an Indiana regulator coming onto its premises out of state and inspecting and auditing at random whatever production happens to be on the production line at the time, which could be product intended for other jurisdictions. So you have, and if they didn't like what they saw, they would have the authority to hold the producer in violation of their permit and to shut them down in the middle of a production run intended for another state. So I think the reason that we're not pushing that issue anymore is we do not, it's premature to know exactly what the ATC would do to enforce
it. It could be enforced unconstitutionally. It could be, perhaps it could be constitutional.
Correct.
Okay. We talked a moment ago about the Vermont mercury lamp labeling case. Is there any case law, I've looked and haven't found it yet, involving or upholding state regulation of out-of-state manufacturing processes?
There is not. The closest is the Rocky Mountain Farmers Union case, where California, to control carbon emissions, was regulating how producers of automobile fuel, of mm-hmm. gasoline, how they blended it and how much ethanol they put in. So it almost looks like they did, except it turns out what they were actually regulating was the mixing, the blending process. And with fuel, with gasoline, it turns out that gasoline producers blend their fuel differently all over the country. High altitude, low altitude, different blend in the gasoline, different octanes at high altitude, different blends in humid climates and cold climates, so that it read closely, that case was not actually regulating the manufacturing or production process itself, like the package, the childproof packaging cases, like the labeling cases, this one, the blending case. These are all things that happen post-production. And affect only the product that is going to that one state.
Well, I don't know the specific states, but there are sometimes manufacturers and complain about California. It has 20% of the population. They feel they've got to go along with whatever California. So California starts the ball rolling, and that other people have to occupy. Now, I don't know whether that is similar to what you think is happening here. It's mostly an avoidance of Indiana that seems to be what's happening.
Well, there are a couple of things with California. One is, of course, the Commerce Clause gives the federal government the power to regulate commerce among the states. Right. And many times in environmental laws and automobile safety regulations and some of the things that make the front page of the paper, Congress has in fact authorized California through its environmental laws to have different and more restrictive laws because of local public health concerns.
But I'm talking about if they've got to conform to California, a manufacturer does that anyway, just because in order to be able to distribute the same product under other states.
Yeah, a lot of the, it's certainly true
that I can't name them, I just know that in general.
That's right, that ultimately if a state imposes restrictive regulations on what is being sold in the state, that is, it's confined to the state, a manufacturer might say, I do or I don't want to comply with that. If it's California, they're going to say, all right, we better start building everything that way because it's more efficient to do so. The problem here is that this statute does not just regulate sales within the state. It reaches out and directly regulates the manufacturing facility itself. And
if they want to put their stuff in Indiana.
But they don't, yes, if they want to put it, or the problem is if somebody else puts it in Indiana, because the statute is not limited to products sold in Indiana. Section 1 says sold, possessed, or used, regardless of how they got into the state. So a producer who wants to avoid the Indiana market may in fact not be able to do so because they sell to a distributor and the distributor gets a phone call from an Indiana retailer saying, we need two cases of e-liquid. The producer has no way of knowing that or controlling it.
I'm trying to remember sales of Coors beer years ago when they were only available in Colorado, right? But presumably this statute would apply if an Indiana resident bought the product in Kentucky and then brought it into Indiana and used it here.
Yes, it does. Section 711 says it applies if it's used, and 763 says a person may not knowingly acquire an e-liquid and from a person who doesn't hold a valid permit.
Sorry, could I just briefly ask,
sure.
I don't want to ask you to address the state's argument that your logic would also wind up limiting Indiana's ability to apply its tort law to products produced out of state and used or causing harm in the state.
I would say that the Indiana's products liability law or tort law applies only within the state of Indiana. It does not say that if an accident takes place in Kentucky, that Kentucky must apply Indiana's criteria for what makes a defective product. This law is not simply limited to what is sold in Indiana. It affects the very production process of how an out-of-state manufacturer must build its facility. And to the extent that the argument is a euphemism for saying Indiana has an important public interest in this, that runs into the problem that its public interest itself ends at the state's borders and does not extend into and interfere with the interest in the regulatory regime of a different state.
Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Lowry?
May it please the Court. The Indiana Act does not violate the Commerce Clause, because it does not regulate transactions that occur wholly outside of Indiana. And any manufacturer that is located in another state that is subject to regulations of the Act is only subject to regulations of the Act because they have sought a permit to be able to sell their e-liquids in Indiana.
But they have to seek a permit if their product might wind up here, right? Whether they intend that or not. Right?
If I can explain, Your Honor.
Please.
The regulations for the manufacturer clearly only apply to a manufacturer who has received a permit. The statute does say that it's e-liquids that end up in Indiana. But when you actually look at one of the problems with this case was this case and the dispositive motions were brought before the statute actually fully went into effect. So this is not in the record or in front of the court, but the ATC is not running into a manufacturer or into a factory the second they find an e-liquid.
The statute is written, however, it is a violation of Indiana law if a manufacturer's product winds up in Indiana through any mechanism and they don't have a permit, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. A lot of Commerce Clause law has been developed in dairy cases, right?
Yes.
And we know that with dairy there are concerns about purity and quality and public health and packaging, right?
Yes.
So could New York or Illinois tell dairy farmers in Wisconsin or Vermont how their barns have to be built, what kind of locks they have to put on their barns, and how much they have to pay their workers?
They could in the certain situation that is here. The difference with dairy products and food products in general is you have the FDA regulating everything.
Assume there's no FDA.
Right.
Go back to 1880.
Right.
Could New York do that?
I think they could in the case that you have Wisconsin or whoever not regulating the process of dairy products.
Wisconsin says we don't care about what the barns are made of, mm-hmm. how they're designed, what kind of locks they have on them. But you in the consuming state can apply, you can test the products, you can insist that we meet certain quality standards, but you can't tell us how to make them. I asked Mr. Tanford, what's the closest case you've got to regulating out-of-state manufacturing processes?
There aren't any. The Rocky Mountain case, as he said, is probably the closest.
You describe it as simply involving reporting requirements, right? Hmm.
That is one of the things.
As opposed to the substantive requirements that are imposed here.
Yes, Your Honor.
So this sounds to me like a truly unprecedented effort to extend regulatory authority way beyond the state's borders.
It is definitely stronger than any case law that has been before. With the extraterritoriality doctrine, though, Your Honor, the statute's either extraterritorial or it's not. Appellant has stated right. many times in their brief that the extent of the regulations don't matter.
So the boundary that I'm trying to, I'd be interested in your comment on, since we have plaintiffs, at least in the appellate court, are acknowledging that the state can impose its regulations for packaging, labeling, testing, quality control, and so on, for the products that wind up in Indiana. Given that the manufacturing processes occur outside the state, mm-hmm. Why isn't that a reasonable line, in essence, between manufacturing processes and the product that results?
Because as a practical matter, if you're waiting until it gets into the borders, unless you're going to be able to test every single one, then the manufacturing process is what needs to be regulated. If Indiana,
why aren't spot checks enough to satisfy the state's concern?
Well, Your Honor, the evidence that was specifically in front of the General Assembly when they took on the statute, there were manufacturers. They were literally people just walking in the back of their store and stirring this stuff up by hand.
Okay. Well, is that in the district court record?
Yes.
Where is it?
It was actually the video shown. It was attached to, I believe, the state's motion for summary judgment. It was a video that was actually shown to the General Assembly during discussion of the statute.
And from that video, we infer that the only way to regulate this effectively is this unprecedented reach of the state's powers across its border. That's what you're arguing.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can we talk about the security requirements? Why an outside contractor?
That is what the General Assembly decided. What I can tell you is the concern was the security firm needing to meet certain requirements so that way they could make sure that there was a certain quality of security.
Would you care to comment on the Goodcat Court's findings that there's only one company in the United States of America that meets that the criteria, and that the bill was adjusted as it went along when it turned out it had been drafted incorrectly so as to disqualify that firm and was quickly amended so that it would be able to qualify?
Very familiar with that, Your Honor. I actually argued that at the
right.
district court. That is an as-applied disparate impact challenge. The record
I'm
on this
more,
case...
I'm more interested in just the extraordinary phenomenon.
I agree that was definitely a surprising fact. The General Assembly, though, has already stated that they are going to remedy that in the upcoming session.
Legislatures promise a lot of things about upcoming sessions, and I'm wondering if they might not want to do some other corrections to this law. But Do you have any thoughts on the severability of the different requirements here?
For, are we talking about the security firm, or we're talking back on the Commerce Clause?
More broadly, with respect to efforts to reach out-of-state manufacturing processes, the design of facilities, the commercial kitchen requirements, the security requirements, etc.
Correct. Your Honor, honestly, you could basically just knock off Section 7.1-7-6-3, subsection A, and that makes everything better. That is the clause that talks about how anything that ends up in Indiana, or if you're the manufacturer, you send it there, you're violating the code. If you take that off, then the only ones that are going to get in trouble if there is an unpermitted e-liquid being sold in Indiana are the retailers. And that's how the statute is actually being enforced. I know, as I said, this that's not in front of the court at this point. But then the only factories and manufacturers that are being regulated are the ones that sought a permit. And at that point, they've consented to Indiana's regulation.
What about the ones that did not seek a permit and the product ends up at a retailer in Indiana?
Mm-hmm. Well, if that subsection is struck?
If it's still there, I guess.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, that does violate the code.
So you say they're just not enforcing it?
Yes, because I think even the state and the ATC would realize that would cause a Commerce Clause issue if they were just willy-nilly running into any factory that they found a single e-liquid.
Well, as I said at the outset, I worry somewhat about a user who buys it out of state and then brings some in and uses it in Indiana. Now, obviously, if he's sharing it with his friends and doing some other things, that starts to spread it out a little bit. But is that person violating the law?
Yes, I can say that, again, is something that's not necessarily going to be enforced. But also, Your Honor, some states have now legalized marijuana. Indiana has not legalized it. If they go and buy it in a state that's legalized it and they bring it to Indiana, it's still illegal in Indiana. That's not created a Commerce Clause issue.
Has their seller violated Indiana law?
I'm sorry?
Has the person who sold it to them in Colorado violated Indiana law?
I don't believe so.
I don't think so either.
Okay. What about federal law?
Well, yes. Well, Your Honor, to be honest, I think the federal law is probably going to take care of a lot of this case eventually, once that's enacted. And the statute actually alludes to that. Your Honor, I also wanted to point out a couple of things that were mentioned. As far as the audits, if the ATC individual were to see whoever, Nevada, California, products that are being sent to another place, he might see them, but he's not enforcing regulations on those products.
What's audited? What's the audit for?
That's just how they go to check to make sure that the manufacturer is complying with the requirements.
It applies to all the requirements, all the Indiana requirements.
As to the manufacturer.
Okay.
Yeah. There are separate sections of requirements. The requirements specifically for the manufacturer would apply once you receive the permit. So even if the manufacturer has not gotten a certificate and their e-liquid is being sold in Indiana, the violation is that they sold it without a certificate. It's not necessarily that they didn't have X, X, and X of the manufacturing requirements, because those only apply to a manufacturer who has a permit. Those are the requirements you have to meet to get and retain your permit.
But if you don't have a permit, you violated the law if your product winds up in Indiana.
Correct. Yes. Now, also, Your Honor, I would point out too, with like the labeling cases, the emission standards cases. Granted, they're to a lesser extent, but those labels were still being placed in the factory in the other state. I believe the exact case we were talking, it was Vermont, the Sorrell case.
Yeah, the National Electrical Manufacturers Association, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there was the argument made in that case that that's going to throw off their labeling process nationwide. And that the Second Circuit found that that doesn't matter because it's only applying to the products that are coming into
right.
the state.
And it's just labels.
Right, Your Honor. But under the extraterritoriality, it doesn't matter whether it's labels or something much greater.
So your theory under extraterritoriality is that if that once the courts say it's okay for a state to require state-specific labels, then the sky's the limit. You can regulate wages, you can regulate security arrangements, you can regulate building design, every operational aspect.
No, not wages or anything like that.
Why not wages? The Indiana, let's imagine a very different Indiana legislature that says, we are really worried about the quality of workers that you're going to get if you don't pay high enough wages in whether it's manufacturing e-liquids or milking cows in Vermont. So we're going to insist, as with security, the same logic with the security requirements, we're really worried about the quality and we want well-paid workers to produce these products that are going to be used and sold in Indiana. Mm-hmm. Why is that not driven by your logic?
Because, Your Honor, the statute is specifically talking about preventing the adulteration and contamination of e-liquids. The only reason that they're regulating at the manufacturing level is it's not practical to be able to regulate it once it comes into Indiana. If they do random checks, that doesn't do any good if you don't happen to randomly check the ones that are contaminated. The wages in another state, that's not going to the contamination or the adulteration. And that's the only reason why the statute, if Indiana just decided we're going to regulate.
Why do the terms of the security contract link any more closely to contamination or adulteration?
Because that was the evidence that was put in front of the court. They talked to security experts and that was what they were told. Your Honor, if it's not extraterritorial, the requirements are only subject to rational basis. And as long as a rational legislator could have thought that those regulations were necessary to meet the security needs of the statute, then that's all that it required. So, if there are no further questions, Your Honors, we ask that you affirm the district court.
Thank you. How much time? You have about a minute.
I was going to say the red light went off.
You don't have to confess that.
I would just make a couple of quick points. One is to the Attorney General's opening remarks that no transactions taking place outside Indiana are affected. It was stipulated that this act affects out-of-state transactions between producers and distributors and producers and out-of-state retailers. It was also stipulated in the joint stipulations that the production of liquid intended for sale in other states would be controlled by Indiana's rules under this statute. Secondly, they alluded to the videotape shown to the legislature as basically trying to make the case that this was Wild West production, where to justify the need to regulate production itself, first place that would only let them regulate production within Indiana, but in the second place, that tape was very old. This is a new industry, and the record also shows that the industry has itself been taking steps to improve production, to eliminate these kind of mom-and-pop mixing shops, and to move their production to national ISO-certified facilities.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.